There's no infrastructure. There's not a sewage system. There's not an electricity panel. There is absolutely nothing. So they're shipping in sewage. They're shipping in water. They're shipping in every single thing. And those vendors, if you start looking closely at them, gave millions to DeSantis, gave millions to the Trump campaign. Many of them have never even worked in a carceral system before. And it's the entire bit of this facility that is lined up that is literally killing people. So they're closing it, then thank God, right? But also, where's the accountability? What are we going to see as far as accountability? Because it's not a detention center, it's a crime site.
Welcome, everybody, to the Bituation Room. Thank you so much for being here on a Tuesday, June 9th. Happy Pride once again. We are a few days away from, that's right, the UFC fight on the White House lawn. I'm sure everybody's excited to celebrate the president's birthday, surprisingly, still alive, which I think, judging by the amount that he's falling asleep, you know, could have confused me, you know, but I'm sure MAGA will be sounding the alarms at any moment that our president is straight up asleep, asleep on the job, asleep in meetings, asleep during, who knows, probably very important national security briefings, to say nothing of the finals game the other night in Madison Square Garden. You gotta be the biggest D-I-C-K. We're in the first 30 seconds of this YouTube stream. You know I'm not trying to get demonetized. Which, by the way, if you say the word demonetized, they demonetize you anyway because they pretty much assume that you said something terrible. The point is, you gotta be the biggest D-I-C-K sporting good to make people wait for hours on end because you want to attend a finals game at Madison Square Garden, get there despite everybody hating you, fall asleep during the game, as our president did, and then leave reportedly 7 minutes before it was over. Like, at that point, I'm like, okay, he's trolling, right? Like, that's he's trolling. He's trolling New Yorkers, you know. I don't think it's over Mamdani. It's over the, like, you know, I'm trolling. I'm doing this because I can, because I know I could never be elected dog catcher in this city. You know, obviously Upper West Side, very different. But, you know, turns out there's a whole world outside in Manhattan and New York more broadly, not just, you know, the walk between your driver and the door of your dumbass tower, right? Right? There's a little bit of a difference. Anyway, amazing stuff, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show. I'm so excited. We're going to be doing a little bit of a solo show until immigration attorney Katie Blankenship is going to be joining us talking about everything that we need to be talking about when it comes to ICE detention, when it comes to the conditions in them, when it comes to what attorneys like she are doing to stop this. And we will talk about what's going on in Delaney Hall in New Jersey. A very, very big celebrity went to visit recently, and I think we need to talk about the impact that she is having. So if you're here, you like and share the stream, you just palm the keypad, you let people know what you watch on a Tuesday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and thank you so much. You can send in your super chats. We're going to read those at the end. Thanks for your patience on everything. I'm sure the podcast audience loves a super chat as well. I am trying to bring in, yes, I want to make a little announcement. There's always a little bit of a few announcements, but I'm going, it's not a tour, but I will be hitting some cities in the next few months. Okay. A tour implies that you're just sort of constantly on the road. Yeah. So I have a 3.5-year-old and, you know, I gotta, number one, I gotta keep her laced up in her newest princess dresses. So mama got to hustle. But number two, I can't be gone all the time. That's the thing with a kid. You can't always, and she's a little too young to be like our opener, you know, but I will be in Minneapolis on August, here we go, August 20th, ladies and gentlemen, Minneapolis, Thursday night, 7:30 p.m. at the Parkway Theater. I'm so excited. We will have many special guests. I am 99% sure I'll be bringing Matt Lieb. I don't know if you've heard of him, but I also am going to have Liz Winstead on, who is just this awesome comedian, activist, works on Abortion AF. I've had her on the show many, many times. I mean, truly one of the best organizations out there. Get tickets wherever you're listening or watching this, because it's going to be lit tea. And we'll see if there's a second show added specifically for stand-up. But for now, go get your tickets to that. Beautiful artwork, by the way, not AI. Would never use AI and don't use AI. Then in September 5th and 6th, I will be in Seattle back at Laughs Comedy. 5th and 6th, it's a Saturday and a Sunday. And then on 4th and 5th, September 4th and 5th, I'll be in Seattle at Laughs with Matt Lieb. And then 7th and 8th, 7th and 8th, that's Monday, Labor Day Monday, and Tuesday, not Labor Day Tuesday, but the 7th and 8th of September, I'll be in Portland, Oregon, for the Bituation Room and live stand-up. It's going to be a banger of a Bituation Room, y'all. So my good drunk friend who was in the audience 3 years ago, 4 years ago, please come back and be as drunk, if not more so, the next go around. And then October 14th, y'all, I'll be at the Philadelphia Punchline. By the way, the Portland show is at the Helium Comedy Club. In Philadelphia, I'll be at the Philly Punchline with Matt Lieb. That'll be 13th and 14th of October. Again, Bituation Room and stand-up. Matt Lieb will be in tow. And then not yet for sale or announced, but looks like Thursday the 15th, I'll be in Brooklyn with Matt again. So we're doing a little East Coast. I wish we could head over to Boston, but I don't think we're going to bring the kids. So it'll be fun. Come see me. There's other ways you can support me if you're like, I'm not in any of those cities, but I want to support you. I want to see you. You know what you do? You become a patron. Patreon.com/bituationroom. And right now, if you are hearing the sound of my voice, it is free. It is free. It is free. It is free. I don't know how to tell you this. Go in the bio or in the description where you're watching this, or even just go to patreon.com/bituationroom. You get a free month. It ends at the end of June. And that means you get access to all of the exclusive hot button interviews that we did, including with Memo Torres, which was this awesome look at, you know, the raids here in LA. I know it says awesome, but it was a great conversation. Great conversation with Melina Abdullah of Black Lives Matter Grassroots. And then most recently, my newest is with movement strategist Yotam Marome, who has a new book out called For Louder Days. And, you know, I'm titling this, Does the Left Want to Win? Because a lot of times the left gets in our own way. We self-sabotage. And we replicate some of the worst behaviors, you know, that actually exist in the regular world, right? And Yotam has been a movement organizer, meaning on the streets. He's been arrested. He's worked with all kinds of nonprofit groups, amazing groups like Sunrise. And he gives us some, like, an insight, kind of like looking under the hood of, like, what does the last 20 years look like when it comes from a leftist movement perspective? How are we winning? How are we not? And not just on electoral politics. We're talking about, like, base building, community organizing, broad movement moment type stuff, kind of similar to the conversations I was having with Melina Abdullah about, you know, what happened to Black Lives Matter? Like, why was it unable to, make gains, strategic legislative gains? Racism mostly, but anyway, so you get that for a month free. And thank you guys so much if you are already a patron. Again, so many things. There's mugs and merch and our Abolish ICE shirts and Frantifa stickers and all the things. And I promise I'm done with announcements. I'm so sorry. Get your bitch caps on, you guys. We're doing it. What are you bitching about? So, of course, the World Cup, which has seen Shakira back in action. She's got a new song called Die Die, which is ironic because That's Italian for come on, and the Italian team didn't make the World Cup. But the World Cup seemingly had all the fix-ins. You had Shakira. You had Burna Boy, right? It's the world coming together. And I know, Americans, you're not used to this, especially it's a sport where we're not number one. It's so weird. But every 4 years, you know, a corrupt institution called FIFA gathers just the most talented footballers in the world, makes a bunch of money off of them and us, and we all kind of grin and bear it because it's usually a really good time. The matches are very fun. There is a safe feeling of competition on an international stage with no weapons involved. You know what I'm saying? And that is all come crumbling down. Why? Well, because the World Cup is in North America. And specifically, it's in, you know, it's in Mexico. It's in that other, what's the other country? Canada. And sadly, it is in the United States. And the United States in the year 2026 is not a place you want to be, and certainly not a place you want to be if you are an immigrant, if you come from another country, if you are, I don't know, black, brown, Arab, Muslim. These are a lot of the things that, you know, we're not so amenable to under our, let's just be real, white nationalist president, Donald Trump, and the regime that he has overseen. And so, very ironically, as someone who enjoys the World Cup, but and who back in when I used to work for Al Jazeera, again, which is partially funded by the government of Qatar, where the World Cup was held in 2022, do you remember there were human rights violations, right? There were workers who were having their visas withheld and they were building the stadiums and There was so much scandal. The World Cup was pushed so it wouldn't be in the summertime. And everyone was like, oh, Qatar is just so awful and all these human rights abuses. And Francesca, don't you feel terrible, even though I wasn't working for Jazeera in 2022? And just on and on and on. And America said, hold my beer. Hold my chai, because we're going to make the World Cup 2026 far worse than you could possibly imagine. World Cup in Qatar 2022, fairly seamless, all things told. The actual games, pretty good. My favorite team, Argentina, eked out a victory. It was beautiful. Again, all the corruption and BS aside. But here we are, and let's take you through everything that has happened. I think one of the biggest things that the U.S. has done is it's revoking visas and denying visas to international players, fans, and referees. And one of the most beloved referees is a Somali referee named Omar Artan. And he cannot officiate the World Cup because he was denied entry into the U.S. Remember, who does Trump hate the most? Black immigrants, Muslim immigrants, Somalis. Are both, i.e. that is why he hates Ilhan Omar. He can't stand her. Also, she's a woman who dares, you know, talk back to him and, you know, has done more in her life than he will ever accomplish in his. But no matter, this ref who's like sort of renowned to be one of the fairest. Again, these refs are like, you know, again, this is a time of rampant corruption. There have been refs who've thrown games. There have been refs who've had terrible calls, who've been paid off. You know, we're going to definitely see that in this era of Kalshi, you know, poly market betting and BS. But like, arguably, and I remember this ref, FIFA has not stood up for him. FIFA, quote, is not involved in host country immigration processes, including visa adjudications, and has been informed by authorities that Mr. Artan's status will not be changed at present. So again, Infantino, the head of FIFA, and Donald Trump, the guy who Infantino giving Trump the FIFA Peace Award. And then he invades Iran. Like, even if it were a real award, it's just so funny. Like, even if it were a real award, he wouldn't receive it by any measure, but it doesn't matter. So that was one. Another thing is there have been players who've been are stalled because they have been interrogated at the border. the South African team arrived in the U.S. much later than planned because they were not, the delegation was not granted visas. Members of the Senegal national team were forced to remove their shoes and subjected to lengthy searches, sparking accusations of racism. Yes. The Uzbeki national team was searched with bomb-sniffing dogs and the footage went viral. Some Scottish supporters, despite being eligible to enter the U.S. visa-free under the ESTA program, had their travel authorizations revoked just days before departure. Remember, because teams will travel with like their crew, right? Like the people, their supporters. And so the folks are being denied. On top of that, an Iraqi star, yes, Iraq qualified, Ayman Hussein was questioned for 7 hours by U.S. immigration officials. 7 hours. And yet, no team has probably faced this more than Iran. Oh, what? Italy doesn't qualify, but Iran does. Yes, welcome to 2026, bitches. Iran is playing in the World Cup. And we are also currently in a war with Iran. And so the U.S. and DHS are doing everything in their power to thwart Iranian players. This is from the BBC. Last-minute visas and moving training camp. Iran's road to the World Cup. Iran was one of the first teams to qualify for the tournament. And U.S. visas for their players were only approved on Friday. That's, you know, just a few days ago. However, visas have been denied for several members of staff, including the head of Iran's football federation, Mehdi Taj. Now, this is perhaps the grossest part. Like, this is the part where you're like, yeah, fuck the U.S. Like truly, fuck all y'all. This is embarrassing. This is internationally embarrassing. The fact that we treat people like this, and again, as we will talk about in this show, it doesn't matter if you are a world-renowned footballer or if you are a mom who is seeking a better life in the United States. We will treat you, especially if you're an immigrant, but especially if you're black or brown or Muslim, we'll treat you like dirt. And it does not matter. But one of the injustices, one of the things that we are making the Iranian team do is they cannot stay on U.S. soil between their games. So they are actually based out of Tijuana, Mexico. Now, Mexico, again, is hosting some games. So, you know, it's perfectly acceptable. Claudia Sheinbaum was sort of open about accepting the Iranian team. But, like, that's how racist and messed up this entire thing is. The Iran moved their World Cup base camp from United States to Tijuana, Mexico amid the war and after FIFA approved the change. The team had originally planned to be based in Tucson, Arizona. Now, Tijuana makes sense because Iran's playing a lot of its games in Los Angeles at SoFi Stadium, which BTW, SoFi Stadium, sort of notoriously blood-sucking. I mean, all these stadiums, right? But SoFi's terrible. Had just narrowly averted a strike for their workers who, again, are working the bathrooms, concessions, ticket taking, all of that. So the thing stinks from like top to bottom. But anyway, we are giving the indecency and the indignity of not even being able to sleep here in Los Angeles. They have to go all the way back to Tijuana. What is like a 5-hour drive, 6-hour drive. Iran's ambassador to Mexico, Albo Fazl Pasadide, says the national team has been notified that under conditions of its visas, players must enter and leave the U.S. territory on the same day as their matches. And in case you weren't fully on a, I want Iran to win, I mean, on a football level, right? 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 Suddenly there's something in my eye. Just on football, right? Just on football. Iranian players are still standing tall and they are all wearing one very specific pin, a little pin that has the number 168, which commemorates the number of children and family who were murdered in the Minab U.S.-Israeli strike. Remember the very first strike that sort of kicked off this war, kicked it off with the war crime and killed school children, double tapped that school, meaning the people rushing to the aid of those initially killed in the first strike were also struck. I mean, the U.S. really wants China to be the hegemon. Like, the U.S. is really just like, you know what? China, take the reins. Like, there couldn't be, like, we don't want this responsibility, clearly. We don't want to be leaders in the world. We don't want to be leaders in tech or innovation. We don't want to be leaders in certainly humanitarianism. We don't want to be leaders in medicine and science. We don't want to be leaders in anything other than how to be cruel and racist. Right? That's it. That's all we want to do. And like war. It's just such a disgrace. It's a disgrace to the players, to their families, to the fans, to the countries. I am sorry. Lo siento. Nunca tendría que estar aquí. El World Cup, la Copa Mundial, el World Cup no es español. Se me va mi español porque soy tan, tan enojada. So anyway, aquí estamos y no nos vamos. Oh, and by the way, there's also mass shootings playing out in like Kansas City. Like, no big deal. No big deal. It's just like, you know, come to the U.S., play your little game that our country doesn't even really respect. And, you know, maybe die in a mass shooting after being stopped and frisked for 8 hours by, you know, overweight DHS agents and CBP. You're welcome. Enjoy your Sbarro's pizza. I hope you enjoy your frozen Applebee's dinner that is still a little bit frozen. Okay? American cuisine. It's good. Don't fucking embarrass me anymore. I'm so tired. All right, you guys. I love the game. I like watching it. It's so sad. I'm still going to watch. I'm not going to boycott unless the players boycott, which honestly they should. Let's get into the rest of the week. So many things, but these are my top few. This is the week where. You don't like my music says, weird that the World Cup in Qatar looks positively cheery and affordable by comparison. Oh, we didn't even talk about the price. Like, looking at the price, right, the sort of round of, you know, not the round of 32, the group stage. I think a group stage ticket in Qatar was like $600. Group stage tickets in the U.S. are like $2,500. Like, there was no protections against, you know, making these things affordable for anyone who lives here. These stadiums are going to be empty. It's so stupid. Like, again, I'm not, like, I'm a fan, but I'm not that much of a fan to, like, organize an actual, like, FIFA boycott or, like, something real. But, like, if I were, I absolutely would. If I were, I would. You know what I'm saying? Okay, I got a lot of good comments, but let's keep going. Let's keep going, y'all. Where do we start? Where do we start? Well, let's start with a little man baby president that we have who is buying into the lies that, of course, he's seeing on Fox News, which is that somehow the California elections have been rigged. Even though on the governor's race, Steve Hilton is beating Tom Steyer. As much as it pains me to say that, I still maintain a candle lit. I've got my little Steyer corner. I don't really, but I should. The votes are still being counted. I believe there's something like 1.6 million more votes, if you can believe that. It's almost like it's one of the most populous states in the country and that we do things incredibly by the book. And yes, you are allowed to turn in your ballot day of. And so long as it's postmarked by Election Day, it's been a week now, it is good. But of course, Republicans don't care about that. They see that the red mirage, they see that, you know, Spencer Pratt, the washed up reality star who did not have homeowners insurance when his home sadly burned down in the Palisades. Sadly, because if it hadn't burned down and if he had homeowners insurance, we probably wouldn't have to hear about him ever. Who has been literally just running AI billboards all over this city and who's been artificially inflated by right-wing media. Spencer Pratt just got edged out, oopsies, by a DSA-backed candidate named Nithya Raman, who was one of the first candidates in city council to kind of usher in a wave of democratic socialist progressive candidates who wanted real change in city hall. And again, I've had my critiques of Nithya. We can talk about that a little bit later. Specifically, I felt like she jumped in the race really, really late. But she freaking did it. She did it. And Trump, among many others, are very, very upset about that. Here he is with Kristen Welker, absolutely having a fit until he gets up and leaves.
It was a dirty election.
Mr.
And
President,
it's happening again right now in California.
You've never presented evidence.
It's happening
the
right now in California. Right now, it's look at what's
Where's
happening
the
in California.
To that?
It's
the Republicans
4 days.
Are doing well in California.
California, it's, no, they're not. They're dropping fast because it's a rigged election. Let me tell you, it's 4 days. And they aren't even close
that's
to coming
how they,
up
that's
with
how they count
You know
the
why
votes
they're doing that? Because they're cheating on the election.
There's what do you have evidence they're, to support?
All
that?
I have to do is look. All
but,
I have to do is
that's
look.
That's not evidence.
And I listen. And I listen to people but, and let's see what happens.
But sir, that's not evidence.
Do you think
and
it's appropriate?
That's how they
that
count they the votes. In
do you
California?
Think it's appropriate that they have an election and 5 days later they're nowhere close to picking
State
a winner?
State and local officials acknowledge they are slow. They're urging.
No, they're crooked.
They're urging
they're
the votes to be counted quickly. That's how they
they're
vote in
crooked,
California.
They're crooked, just like you're crooked. Your press is crooked and Meet the Press is crooked.
He then later got up, pulled his microphone off, and walked away. And it was the slowest get up possible. I mean, he was like, there was just a lot of, I mean, look, guys, when he is awake, he's not really at his best. So there he was in front of the hay and the tractors in this staged little interview with Meet the Press. And Kristen Welker did the most minimal. That's how they do the votes in California. That's how they count. And then she was like, yeah, Republicans are not doing bad there. And he's like, no, they're not. They're tanking. They're, oh, God. So that is how the right is freaking out. Here's J.D. Vance. And this is when he says, I listen to people. I hear them. I watch things. This is what he's watching.
California, not sure how closely you've been following this. They are still counting the votes. Do you trust this election?
Fundamentally, the problem here with this whole thing is, how is it that you had, you know, Karen Bass was in first place, Spencer Pratt was in second place, and then this other woman was in third place? You would expect these mail-in ballots to kind of meet that same basic pattern where, you know, number one would get the most votes, number two would get the second most votes, and so on. But somehow we find ourselves in a situation where, number one, they're still receiving ballots, not just counting ballots, Jesse, they're still receiving ballots. And number two, the way that they're coming in just so happens to work out such that the Republican is getting kicked out of the final two, so it's a Democrat versus Democrat runoff. That seems pretty shady to me, especially when you add on top of the fact that in California, you are prohibited from asking for somebody's identification before they vote.
Okay, so you're prohibited from asking for someone's identification, but literally every single ballot is signature verified. Every single ballot. So not only do we have more liberal laws, meaning you can postmark day of, but we have more checks than most states do on their voting processes. So like, and I love, he's like, you know, and Spencer was winning and, or the mayor was winning and Spencer was winning and this other woman. And I, it's just, it's a little bit like, is everyone thinking what I'm thinking? Like his, this other woman is South Asian. She's Indian. Her name's Nithya Raman. So is his wife, who is currently pregnant. Okay. Usha, whose last name I don't know, but I'm sure it wasn't Vance. Like, there also is a little bit of, again, racism and sexism. I'm just like, just say her name. This other woman, just say it. I don't know, man. Don't you have an Indian family? So there's a little bit of that there, but like, it's shady to me that they keep on counting the ballots. So this is the narrative they're trying to spin on all of that. I have to say, you know, I saw this, the Majority Report did this a little bit earlier, but it is a great clip. We have to look at why is it that Spencer Pratt, Republican Timu Trump, is not winning in the blue city of Los Angeles. Here's Harry Enten talking about that.
Conspiracy
on what is this, CBS? Or no, where is he still allowed to be? ABC, I think.
Theory I have ever heard, because the Democratic establishment and Karen Bass wanted Spencer Pratt in the runoff. They don't want any part to do with Nithya Raman. Why is that? Because just take a look here. Okay, mayor runoff polls, Bass versus opponent versus Pratt. Bass would have crushed Pratt by 18 points. That's what the polling showed. Look at how she does against Nithya Raman. On the other hand, Raman is ahead by 4 points.
So this is exactly the point of the conspiracy, is that somehow the Democrats are working so that they are the top two. Now, people, when have you ever seen the Democratic establishment want another Democrat to be in the race so they could fight with someone who might actually hold their feet to the fire and be like, so you can't just say you're not a fascist or you don't want to deport homeless people into a concentration camp. You're going to actually have to answer for, you know, the fact that we, that rents are skyrocketing, that their infrastructure is crumbling. Like, they don't want that. Someone like Karen Bass doesn't want, this is the same, again, principle of Hillary Clinton saying, I would rather go up against Trump than anybody, than any other Republican. And how did that turn out? And honestly, like, I do think that Bass would have crushed Pratt, because a lot of voters would have been sort of mindlessly like, we gotta stop Pratt. I don't think he would have had a chance. So it's way, way easier for Bass to defeat someone like Pratt than Rahman's up. Rahman versus Bass is up. Why? Because Harry will continue.
Bass has a real race on her hand if, in fact, Raman is the one who advances. And, of course, the Democratic establishment is backing Karen Bass. But versus Spencer Pratt, she was crushing him. She wanted to face Pratt. She wanted nothing to do with Raman. That's why these conspiracy theories simply put make no sense, people.
When we talk about favorability, you have more evidence here.
Yeah, this is more evidence. You know, why is it that Nithya Raman's doing so much better than Spencer Pratt would against Karen Bass? It's simply put, Raman is actually decently liked by L.A. city voters. Look at this. Okay, Nithya Raman, +5 on the net favorability rating. Karen Bass, way underwater at -22 points. You basically just need someone who's half decently well-liked to be favored, or at least have a real shot against the incoming Karen Bass. Spencer Pratt, on the other hand, look at that. He's even less like than Karen Bass. He's 32 points underwater. Karen Bass doesn't want to face Nithya Raman. She would love to face Spencer Pratt because, simply put, she's managed to find someone who's more unpopular than she is, and she's quite unpopular.
That's so good. Simply put, she's found someone who's more unpopular than she is, which is 100% true, spot on. Like, and good for Raman, because I think Raman's also sort of unknown to a lot of voters. I mean, they know her generally. Her district loves her, but she still has yet to make her case to, you know, broader voters, and people are trying to like get to know her and see what she's about. But yeah, people do not like Karen Bass for a lot of different reasons. But I think sort of a consensus is that she handled the Palisades fire specifically, although there was another fire, but it was in, you know, not within Los Angeles County, or excuse me, it was broader in the county, not in Los Angeles City, that her handling of the fires was bad. Dude, she fired the fire chief. You guys remember that? When like the fire chief was saying like, yeah, man, we were kind of like, we needed a little bit more money. And you know, when the fire chief had the audacity to sort of explain what was going on. And of course, remember, the right hated the fire chief because it was a woman. And they were like, oh, this lesbian or whatever. So that was sort of the broader context. And I think Bass totally passed the buck on that. And, you know, we'll see what happens in the general. But I think it's also important to know that as conservative as the loudest Angelinos are, your James Woods is, your, you know, fucking Gwyneth Paltrow's, who's like, I, you know, she's like making the rounds on like, I guess the founder of Andereal, another company named after Lord of the Rings, has a podcast, and Gwyneth Paltrow's up there. As much as all the conservatives that are here who get outsized attention from media, they are all another Spencer Pratt. They're out there being like, Hollywood is liberal, it sucks. And it's like, yeah, you might be one person, but you're not the broad base of voters. The broad base of voters in LA are Democrats are leftist, are progressives, and there are more people to the left of a centrist like Karen Bass than there are to the right of a centrist like Karen Bass. But as I stated and we talked about last week, the danger really is if you reelect or only have as an option a centrist like Karen Bass, let's say Karen and Pratt were going to November, Pratt would lose, Bass would win, and the next time around, you know, a fucking reincarnate of, I don't know, Gwyneth Paltrow would win on a we should just grind up the poor. Like James Woods and Mel Gibson would win. Do you know what I mean? Like that is what centrist Democrats do. They prime the ground because they're corporatists and they're beholden to the same people. But again, with like the rainbow pride flag or whatever, they're beholden to the same interests. They do nothing. They don't actually challenge power. They don't make the city more affordable. And instead, they fund cops to, as we all know, clean up for the fact that their cities are wildly unaffordable and unlivable. And there's massive inequality. People lose their jobs and their homes and they're living on the streets. And so you have to hire more cops because, of course, you have to clean up your own goddamn mess. And that is how cities under centrist Democrats work. Cities under people like Zoran Mamdani experience their first dip in homicides in however many years, like a dramatic decrease of crime in Mamdani's first 6 months. Makes you wonder when you give people $30 an hour to shovel some snow or give them eviction protections, how productive and happy and, you know, your people can be. Anyway, good on Nithya. Don't talk to me about Steyer. You'll have to follow me on the socials to get my final take on the Becerra situation. Again, speaking of wishing we didn't have corporate Democrats, and someone who certainly, if Becerra wins in 4-8 years, will deliver us to, unless we can mount an actual opposition, could absolutely backslide us into something MAGA. I love this state so much. And like, I sometimes really struggle to see the difference between someone who's completely backed by corporations who are hell bent on making our lives even more miserable and someone who's backed by corporations hell bent on making our lives more miserable, plus the racism and the fascism. Like, Becerra doesn't believe in abolishing ICE. Becerra is not going to do much to stop ICE raids. Becerra is not going to protect the Latino community that he supposedly hails from, right? That's just not happening under that person. So it's a hard pill for me to swallow. It is very upsetting, but I maintain a very small sliver of hope. NorCal is kind of crushing it. And yes, I said NorCal. Okay, I have to get to this story because it's massively, it's been on my mind. Look, she's been away and now she's back. She is just as unfeeling. I mean, truly, they have perfected the lobotomy science and she's here and she's
an incredible project with my husband in the Mediterranean. It's massive in scale.
I think that's an understatement. Can you explain?
Yes, it is.
There's no power on this island. You're building everything from scratch, correct?
Well, it's an unbelievable, beautiful 1,400-hectare private island in the middle of the Mediterranean. We were on a friend's boat, and we stopped for a swim. Effectively, that's how we found it. We swam to the island. We went on a hike, barefoot all the way up to the top, and we were just captivated. And it stayed with us ever since. And over the course of many years, we developed the opportunity to help realize its potential and transform it, but with a lot of restraint and care because the land is so beautiful that really the architecture has to be fully integrated into it, almost rise from it. You know, it's not even a business for me, despite the scale of it.
It's not? It's not a business. Okay, why are you doing it?
We not only the island, but we have five miles of beachfront directly across from the island, this beautiful peninsula with a lagoon on one side, the ocean on the other.
You already have Florida, bitch. You have Florida. You fucking, like, psycho Stepford wife, never been to therapy, suppressing all the shit that your dad probably did to you. You fucking hanging on by a thread ass Barbie. Just like, you have Florida. Florida's got a lagoon. Isn't that what West Palm Beach is?
Beautiful white sand beaches. For me, this is, it feels more like a challenge than anything else. The culmination of all of my experience in real estate, all of my travel, a lot of reflection on how I want to live, how I think people increasingly are wanting to live, and trying to really build something that's a tangible manifestation of that.
Okay. Reflect how people, how I want to live, how I think increasingly people want to live, and build a tangible manifestation that reflects that. She's not talking about wanting to live on the beach. She's not talking about wanting to live in nature. Nay, that is not what this project in Albania is about. Like I said, she already has beachfront property. She has already got access to all the nature or all the destruction. She is talking about what the far right and the billionaires and oligarchs have wanted to do, which is create privatized cities. And they took and they set their sights on Albania. And there's a few reasons for that. And actually, this show, me and my crew have talked about this issue before. We have done this exact topic. Why? Because Albania, and specifically this island, is being seen as a little bit of a dry run for what? What could become of Gaza. Here was me about, when was this? 6 months ago? Yeah, maybe, longer than that, a year ago. This was one of the first pieces that I did. It was called Gaza 2035, and this is the Albania part.
And while he hasn't said too much more about the future of Gaza, Kushner's company has purchased an island off of Albania? According to reporting from Matthew Broomfield for Jacobin, Kushner bought the island of Sezan in 2024 from the Albanian government, which changed its laws to approve the sale, and Affinity Partners will pay no tax during construction, while the Albanian government will underwrite all infrastructure costs.
That's insane.
Amazing deal. Here's the other thing. Albania's Prime Minister, Edi Rama, is a staunch supporter of Israel. And this year, he won Israel's Presidential Medal of Freedom, which is also known as the Top Civilian Award. And given how the IDF distinguishes between civilians and fighters, feels less like an honor and more like a threat. Albania and Israel are connected in a lot of other ways. Albania is the fourth largest provider of oil to Israel. They have cybersecurity and defense ties. And Albania could be a strategic site from which to fight Iran. As for Kushner Sezan, the island will be developed into the usual tacky rich people shit, luxury hotels, resorts, casinos. But as Matt Broomfield writes, it will be a mooted pro-Israeli Muslim microstate where Albania.
A mooted pro-Israeli Muslim microstate. If you couldn't hear, again, just like words that when strung together are terrifying.
Albanian Premier Edi Rama is positioning his country as a crucial outpost for an emergent constellation of right-wing populists and apologists for Israel. Yikes. According to Broomfield, Kushner might be setting up Sezan as a dry run for its plans in a post-genocide Israeli-administered Gaza. And here we thought Jared and Ivanka were laying low this whole time. We just had no idea how low.
Okay, thank you, old Francesca, for that. So we had talked about this based on the reporting of Matthew Broomfield, who actually we then interviewed. You can go back and watch that interview. But that is what it is. It's about, because of course it's about Israel. It's about billionaires in Israel somehow. But and of course, back then, we hadn't attacked Iran yet. So they got to keep on building up. But again, it is a privatized city. It's going to be pro-Israel, just like the president. But the Albanians are kind of having a lot to say about this.
With a message for their prime minister.
Albania is not for sale.
They're demanding authorities stop the construction of a $1.4 billion luxury coastal resort backed by Jared Kushner's investment firm, Affinity Partners.
It will be basically another city.
Protesters went to the site of the proposed development today, which sits on the country's Adriatic coast and wildlife reserve, home to seals, nesting sea turtles, and flocks of flamingos. In a podcast earlier this week, Ivanka Trump discussed how she and her husband stumbled upon the area's untouched beauty while insists the project will transform tourism and the country's economy.
The aim is to make something unique that will be amazing for Albanians, but it will be also a gift of Albania to all of you in Europe.
A little bit of an update there. The project's been, the banking, the financing of the project has been put on hold. Shout out to the Albanian people. Oh, you didn't know about Albania. Oh, you thought you were just going to put a, like you do with the United States, you just throw a data center in our homes and, you know, we go to a town hall and then all our representatives are like, sorry, we can't do anything about that. No. Albanian people have been protesting for days, weeks now. And the Albanian anti-corruption prosecutors just froze the accounts of Jared's company, which is beautiful. I mean, we'll see how long this lasts. We'll see how many people the president or the prime minister paid off to make sure that this goes through. But this has been happening in front of their faces. Like, to think that the Albanian people are just going to be cool about that. And again, it sounds like this is a nature preserve. Like, it was so beautiful because there was nothing here. And we're like, wait a minute, why isn't there an infinity pool here? Like, that's such a psychopathic way of seeing, like, natural beauty as being like how... But it's not about business. It's really beyond that. It's about what if cities, but no black people, you know, it's about like, what if everything I want, but like delivered by robots instead of immigrants, you know, and like, they're going to be slower sometimes, but you know, they'll be trained by real human immigrants. Like, good for you, Albania. I love you, and keep up the pressure. There's so many other stories, so much good resistance happening globally. You got Bolivia is going ham. I will talk about that story in the near future. But for now, let me bring in my guest, who is here. She is an immigration attorney from Sanctuary of the South, which is a grassroots legal services organization that provides critical, affordable legal defense to immigrant families affected by detention, deportation, and abuse. Please welcome Katie Blankenship. Katie. Good afternoon.
Thanks so much for being here.
It's great to be here.
Yes, I want to first just ask you about Sanctuary of the South, because I was reading that you're not funded by the government and you don't, you know, get, it's all like donations. Like, tell me about this organization that you're part of or that maybe you helped build. Tell me about your involvement.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm very proud and honored to say I'm the founder. So, we kicked this off really robustly at the beginning of last year, but started getting prepared soon after the election. And we are a different sort of immigrants' rights organization. We are outside the 501c3 space very intentionally. We're a private entity with a mission. And unapologetic about that in this environment where we see our 501c3 partners targeted mercilessly by this government. They are losing millions of funding. Hello, SPLC was indicted on criminal charges. What's happening? Everybody's getting cease and desist. And we just said, hell no to that. We're going to represent everybody that we want to represent. We're going to say the truth about what's happening in this environment. We're not going to be threatened with our basic status or tied to government funds when this government is, an unlawful, basically criminal organization. That's where we are. Yes. And so we provide low bono representation, pro bono representation. We work with clients on reduced rates and we work on donations and community support, and we're doing it. And we're here and going stronger a year and a half later. It's brutal. It's crazy. I'm exhausted and enraged constantly. But, yeah. You know, I actually, you know, I have the incredible privilege of getting up every morning and being able to do something when I think so many of us are just enraged and feel so freaking powerless of how to tackle this. So, you know, I'm thankful for that.
That's a beautiful way to put it. Because I think a lot of people are like, yeah, what can I do?
Yeah.
And you have been working with detainees who have borne the brunt of this, you know, this onslaught from the Trump regime. Can you just explain, you know, I've talked to Memo Torres of LA Taco, who's been tracking, you know, the ICE raids and the deaths. Yeah. And, you know, he was saying to me, the focus has to be on detention centers. And I think that is where a lot of the focus now is. Can you just explain like the scale of this? How many people are now in federal immigration detention or ICE detention? And how many more facilities are we seeing being rolled out, especially with the, you know, the big, beautiful bill and all the money that
the $45 billion?
Yeah.
For human suffering. Yeah. That one. Oh yeah. Okay. So just as a very snapshot background of the space, because frankly, most people, you know, immigration detention hasn't been on their radar. And that is due to a very successful anti-immigrant propaganda machine that has, you know, drove its way through this country for years. But we've had a crisis in detention for a long time. They have always been human cages for profit. People also should understand they're new, right? I was born in 1980. That's about the time later, actually, in the 80s that we started having detention centers. What's been normal, and I think it's scary to use that word here because to normalize ICE detention pre or post Trump is a mistake. But what has been, you know, the sort of average of practitioners is that in immigration detention, you have about 20,000 people. That's always been a huge number that we've been dealing with. But people have to understand that's ballooned to 70,000. I think it's important for people to understand that that's about $200 a day per taxpayer for people who are denied medical care, for people who are physically abused, for people who do not even have a blanket or a pillow to sleep on and have been sleeping on the floor, literally under toilets. And we have witnessed a human rights crisis in detention because of Trump's immigration enforcement policies.
Yeah.
So we're blowing up over the place. There's black sites opening up that are weird relationships between the state and the feds, like quote unquote alligator Alcatraz. It's a disgusting name. And then we have the warehouse phenomenon, you know, opening up. And, you know, hat tip to all of our communities out there coming out, like a lot of them have been able to stop these places coming into their community. But there's so many and there's so much dark money here.
Yeah, I want to talk about the money a little bit later, but let's just talk about the people. You know, obviously part of that propaganda was calling undocumented people or even people in. And I'm curious to know, you know, what percentage of people are we're currently doing things the right way, you know, as the right loves to say, and even Democrats love to say doing things the right way. But yes, who are we talking about? Are they actually criminals? If they are criminals, you know, we've heard of stories of, you know, a grandmother who bounced a check like $200 check, you know, 20 years ago, who was detained. Tell me about, you know, I guess who these folks are.
Yeah. So it is the people, the communities, the individuals that make up people in ICE detention are as a mixed bag of any other population of a huge group of people. They are many of them asylum seekers. Many of them are in detention, even though they were here lawfully, such as they were under DACA or they have a work permit or they have protection under what's called the Convention Against Torture Act. You have plenty of people that may have criminal records, but have resolved those 20 years ago, been living in the country lawfully doing ICE check-ins. Well, now that's gone and they just get picked up for driving while brown or black, frankly. What we see right now, especially SOS works in detention centers throughout the Southeast. We have a lot of folks in Florida right now. And what we're seeing, especially like in these black sites I mentioned, like Alligator Alcatraz, where we've been told it's the worst of the worst, which is just disgusting. And, you know, like get those words out of your mouth regardless. Mm-hmm. But we have folks that have absolutely never come in contact with law enforcement, have pending applications for asylum, have pending applications for their actual residency because they have U.S. citizen spouses or children. They've gone through the entire process and they are sitting in a cage in the Everglades. And so this idea of, you know, we're collecting the worst of the worst, we're getting these criminal aliens out of here is not only a false flag, but it's a false flag that has been supported by us allowing this immigration, hatred, discrimination, and propaganda to perpetuate. Absolutely. And we're paying the price.
Absolutely. I think coming back to that is really crucial because it gives us some insights about where we need to go. But when you talk about whatever, I've heard you talk about, you know, say the Everglades, you know, internment facility and not Alligator Alcatraz, but this place is now being shut down because by their very own standards, it was not up to snuff. This is a place where, and I had talked about this on this show, there was a box. It was called the box where they would put supposed misbehaving detainees in like a tiny box in the sun to face, I guess, torture. It's just straight up torture. These are people you just said who are possibly seeking asylum in this country under the conventions, anti-torture conventions, under international law because of what they were facing in their home countries, coming here and now being detained in these torturous conditions. The irony is just right in our faces. The cruelty is in our faces. But tell me about this struggle around, you know, the Everglades internment facility. Like, who got rich off of it? What's happening? How is this sort of like
DeSantis and Trump supporters who are millionaires and billionaires got richer? That's who has benefited from this. It has cost Florida taxpayers $1 million a day. I think the most obvious reason that DeSantis is running from it is it is an absolute policy advocacy nightmare. Florida has absolutely turned against this facility. It has been hated. It has caused so much damage in just the Miami community, the Cuban diaspora, the Venezuelan diaspora. It's been this sort of just complete failure from the beginning. And of course, the feds never paid Florida back for that money. And so now they're all freaking out. People should look, though. What's interesting about this facility is the vendors that came onto this facility. So if you don't know South Florida, when we say it's the Everglades internment camp, we mean it. It is out in the middle of the freaking Everglades. You drive out through Miami, about an hour and a half in the middle of the Miccosukee tribal land, and that's out there. There's no infrastructure. You've got to understand that. There's not a sewage system. There's not an electricity panel. There is absolutely nothing. So they're shipping in sewage. They're shipping in water. They're shipping in every single thing. And those vendors, if you start looking closely at them, gave millions to DeSantis, gave millions to the Trump campaign. Many of them have never even worked in a carceral system before. And it's the entire bit of this facility that is lined up, that is literally killing people. So they're closing it, then thank God, right? But also, where's the accountability? What are we going to see as far as accountability? Because it's not a detention center, it's a crime site. That is what it is. It is a crime scene.
Absolutely.
And so there has to be this accountability for it.
I want to talk to you about what you think that looks like before we wrap, but I do want to just stay on this because, you know, there's other conditions. Obviously, Delaney Hall is really in the news, this New Jersey detention facility, the first one to open under, Trump's second term. And speaking of who's getting rich, you know, Howard Lutnick, Commerce Secretary, and his sons are tied to a lot of the real estate warehouse deals. So again, there's a lot of, there's a lot of places also of pressure in terms of boycotting, in terms of accountability, but you're absolutely right. And people like our Commerce Secretary are making money off of them. But Delaney
with
Hall.
No Epstein investigation. Hello.
Exactly. The right now, there are hunger strikers. People inside Delaney Hall are on a hunger strike protesting the conditions, but they are also on a labor strike. And you think, wait, what? What do you mean labor strike? It's because they're being forced to work in detention. This is a facility run by CoreCivic. Can you just explain what the hell? Like, they from what you know, is this only at Delaney? Is this other places? What products are they making and who are they working for?
It's slave labor. So it's a very similar situation as we have in some of our for-profit prison systems, right? This is slave labor. So basically they use work as a privilege, actually. They say, oh, well, if you are well-behaved or we're not going to assign you gang affiliation and puts you in the shoe, which they do because somebody might have a tattoo of their mother now. They use work as a privilege because you get to actually get out, and that's how you can help fund your commissary and actually make calls. Because here's the thing about ICE detention. We are not in criminal custody. This has nothing to do with criminal custody. It's civil detention. Mm-hmm. So what that means is they don't have the same constitutional rights. So this system doesn't have to provide them with free phone calls. They can charge them for their phone calls. Right? They don't have to necessarily provide maxi pads or tampons when necessary. They can tell you you have to get that from the commissary while there are reports of them stealing commissary funds. So this is a system which is meant to further abuse and enrich all of these people who are lining their pockets, faceless human suffering. And it happens yep. not just in Delaney. It happens in every detention center that's out there.
I was reading that the one thing that may, when we ever get accountability, if we can and do, whether there's political will and popular will, is that the 13th Amendment says, you know, slavery is outlawed unless that person has been convicted of a crime, but which is on its face awful and terrible, and I think we all stand against that.
Certainly.
And in this case, because they are not. These are civil violations, if you know, immigration violations, that 13th Amendment seems like it still stands defending these detainees from forced labor.
Yes, Francesca, make it make sense. It makes sense. It does not. And no. Every single one of these, you know, we talk about the private prison, but every single ICE detention site is private prison. It just depends on who is the initial recipient of that money. It is always about the money. Even when you go to a county detention center where they pick these very remote sites and they engage with some county sheriff's office who's never entered, you know, dealt with the immigration system before, they choose those places very intentionally. It's a county that's going bankrupt on its own. They can flood money into and pay all their vendors for. And what happens isn't just as the Core Civic, just as the GEO group, there is mass human suffering because they get more money the less they provide. If I give you less medicine and less care, I make more money.
Jesus.
That's the basic recipe of detention.
I also want to, there's two questions that stem mm-hmm. from that. You know, one of them is but there was beforehand the 40,000, you know, people who were in detention, there was a bit of a priority on like moving them out of detention, right? Meaning you could get out of detention. It seems like this system, and I know you've talked about this, is designed to keep people in detention for as long as possible. What does that mean? What does that look like? Even when people are willing to self-deport or whatever, or forego their asylum case or their immigration case and want to leave, they're not able to. Like, explain sort of in immigration court wise, like, how these folks are trapped.
So it looks like the Laken Riley Act. It looks like a decision from the Board of Immigration Appeals called Yehudi Hurtado that takes on government policy. And it looks like internal policy memos brought down from the Trump administration, basically trying to kill every way that people get out.
Okay.
Before your case is heard, right? Let's say you're an asylum seeker, right? Mm-hmm. Francesca, and you have mm-hmm. a case, okay? Mm-hmm. And you are detained. While your case is pending, there have been typically two ways as your lawyer I could get you out of detention. I could go to ICE and ask for parole. And I could say, Francesca is too valuable. She must be allowed to go on air on Tuesdays. We have to have her out. We will die without her. Let her out. And used to back in the day, if we could show that to ICE and show how important it was actually a meaningful way to get out. You could convince them for like gross, you know, medical issues, children at home who are suffering, yes. all that. That's dead. It's gone. It is dead in the ground. There is no more humanitarian parole. They won't admit to that, but there is policy directly from DHS in DC, no more humanitarian parole. I have had people on death's doornail. You're with me.
Yeah.
And it's the doornail. And I can't do anything. Second, I could file for bond for you. I could go to the immigration court and say, she needs bond. She has no criminal history. She has family connections. Let's get her out. Mm-hmm. Then they came. And so it's basically, then they came for bond. They killed parole. And then bond was basically destroyed by the Laken Riley Act, which allows the government to say that you're a danger to society because at any time it was alleged to the police that you were. If the police even come to you and say, Francesca, we got a claim that you slapped somebody at the store the other day, and you go, no, I was here. Here's a picture of me. You wouldn't be bond eligible.
Simply because there was an investigation or an inquiry. I mean, I just have to put like sidebar, Lake and Riley Act is a terrible piece of legislation that Democrats joined with Republicans on to vote. I'm thinking of Senator Ruben Gallego, who thought this was going to be a huge W mm-hmm. for him. We do not need politicians like this. This is awful. And he was also like BFFs with Eric Swalwell. So, you know, that's how I feel about him. But like, that's really interesting that like, just how much damage that the Lake and Riley Act did.
Oh, it's devastating. And then they came for bond for anybody that we call it EWI in my world, right? Entered without inspection. Mm-hmm. Okay. Typically, if you enter without inspection, which people need to understand that one, if you do that and apply for asylum, it's legal. Hello. Applying for asylum is legal. It's something you do once your feet are on the ground in the country where you're seeking asylum. Mm-hmm. Two, even if you just enter without inspection, all right, it's a class B misdemeanor at most. That means consider being ripped from your family, all of your life destroyed for a public intox, a reckless driving charge. But then they said anybody who has been in the interior, it doesn't matter for how long, if they entered without inspection 40 years ago, they are not bond eligible. That has killed this country. I'm not, and I do not mean that, like that is not hyperbole. It has destroyed us. It has made it so that families are permanently separated. Yep. What that means is that people here forever cannot get out. And it's going to SCOTUS. So it will be a case that goes to SCOTUS because there's a circuit split on it right now, which means the big appellate courts disagree. So we'll see.
Well, right. I mean, that's my other question about, I mean, what immigration courts are doing. I mean, people like yourself, I mean, and dealing with, because there's like a new sheriff in town. There's new rules now. And so, and immigration courts, what's crazy is that immigration court can't get people even out of detention. Like, to be free of torture, real torture here.
Well, there's a whole thing to be examined on IJs, on immigration judges, right? So they are, I mean, I could have IJs listening to the show and I'll go before their court. So I will, you know, I'll beg forgiveness, but there are a lot of IJs, let's just say
yeah.
a lot, maybe most, who at this point are either complicit by choice or by feeling they have no other option. 180 immigration judges in the California area were fired simply based on their rate of asylum. No individual assessment. The Trump administration thought they granted too much asylum. Every IJ in this country knows that's coming for them. And so who holds that position right now? People who can't bail for whatever reason and are you know, self-monitoring, or people who are gung-ho for this shit. And yeah. I see those IJs all the time. There's an IJ that's over the Everglades facility that I've never seen so sort of just blatant, you know, ignoring due process. And it is just the harm it causes. It's not just one person. It's not just one family. It's a generational trauma that people will carry.
Maybe talk about that. I mean, how are the communities and the families being impacted? You talked about imagine child separation, but for life, or, you know, for a very, very long time. What is this doing to people?
Well, I'll tell you a story that happened with a client of ours who was originally in Florida, but she was transferred to Texas. She is in a very similar position I just described of people who were denied bond, been here for a long time, absolutely no record, had been filing applications, and has three United States children, all minors from the age of 4 to 10. Jeez. These children suffered so terribly in her absence that we had hundreds of pages of reports from psychologists noting that they can no longer perform in school, that they can't sleep at night, they're having PTSD symptoms, the youngest one has started to regress. We put all of that in front of the judge for what's called a 42B application, which means a United States family member of yours would be so harmed that it's extraordinary relief. You deserve mm-hmm. extraordinary relief. Mm-hmm. And the IJ in Texas, the immigration judge in Texas, showed me, you have completely failed to show me how this family has any sort of extraordinary harm, because any child who's going through this right now would suffer it. So they're just normal. Then they disappeared her in the middle of the night after I said I was going to appeal it. They kicked her across the Mexican border where she was kidnapped and is continues to live in hiding and has never, never been reunited with her children.
Jesus. That's awful. I mean, yeah, that is the other thing about this is like to your point about the immigration judges and the people who are sort of left, right, who decide to stay despite all this is like, or who've maintained their jobs, they're in it for the love of the cruelty or the ethnic cleansing, which is effectively what is being rolled out. It's not immigration. It is ethnic cleansing. We've stopped all asylum, I believe, to this country, which
we are actively trying to kill asylum. It's a tough thing to kill, though, because it is so entrenched in domestic and international law.
Exactly. But
I'll tell you what you can't do right now is win an asylum case in front of an IJ. Cases I would have won 10 months ago. So that's the unofficial way that they kill it. You can hardly win and they get what's called pretermitted, which means, oh, you'd like to apply for asylum here? We don't want to deal with it. So we're going to send you to Honduras or Mexico or how about Namibia? And good luck. And your family's going to stay here.
More people have died at the hands of federal immigration agents since the start of Trump's second term than had in the last 20 years. I think it's around like 65 or plus people. The Trump regime will send the families of those who they've killed or helped to kill letters that say, quote, they received the best care they ever received in their lives. Sort of, if you didn't believe this were a racist project of ethnic cleansing, there you go. They're sending people who are mourning their loved ones a note that basically is like they got all the medical care they would have ever gotten back in your shithole country or whatever. Respond to that. Have they gotten the best medical care in these private detention facilities?
We're suing the Department of Homeland Security for the death of a gentleman named Maxim Cherniak. Maxim was a Ukrainian on humanitarian parole, did all the right things. He was a 45-year-old man. He was in good health. He went into Chrome, and 2 weeks later, he was dead. What happened to Maxim is that he came in at the time where there was such overcrowding that people were literally sleeping under the toilets in the bathrooms, and he immediately got sick. And the stress of being sick raised his blood pressure, and that was noted in his medical records, and he didn't receive blood pressure treatment for that. About a week and a half later, he is found in his cell by his bunkmate seizing, and they call for assistance. It takes the guards about 30 minutes to get there.
Oh my God.
When they get there, he's completely, completely unconscious. And they say, he's a junkie. He's inebriated. And so they drag his lifeless body down, put him in a wheelchair where he falls out of, and they say, see, he's so drunk. He'd been having hypertensive strokes. They take him to the medical bay where instead of calling emergency services, he has three more massive hypertensive strokes. And by the time he was taken to the hospital, 5 hours later, he was brain dead. So that's the sort of medical care that people get inside these detention centers.
That's so harrowing. That is awful. Fuck all of them.
Fuck all of them, dude. Like, fuck all of them.
I mean, this is why, like, we cannot survive on half measures. And we need real justice on this. There's no moving past this. This is a dark stain on our country. And it's, you know, I've always talked about this on the show. Like, ICE is really this outgrowth also of like the worst of our criminal justice system, as we mentioned, the privatization, but also the ways that, you know, you treat people. I mean, that's the kind of neglect we've seen actually sometimes in the cops will show, you know, people who are like resisting arrest or like EMTs won't arrive on time, even after the cops just tase somebody or beat them within, you know, a minute of their life. And then they end up dying on the way to the hospital, on and on. It's like, it's once someone has been labeled a criminal, anything goes.
And
anything is justified.
Immigrant synonymous with criminal.
Exactly. Oh, well, that's the project, like, is making it synonymous with criminal.
It absolutely.
And so there's no, that's why the whole like, well, I'm okay if they just deport the criminals is actually bullshit. It's mm-hmm. a bullshit excuse and it has been bullshit. We know that ICE itself, I always talk about this in 2017, they lobbied DHS head Kirstjen Nielsen or DHS head. And they were like, can you, ICE is actually not very helpful for us. Like we're trying to actually go. We do have a special unit that goes after drug traffickers and human traffickers. And we're not really able to do our jobs now that you've kind of made the whole thing about all immigrants.
Yes. What happened to HSI? Yes.
Exactly. They asked for, because they felt they couldn't actually properly go after the so-called real criminals.
But they've actually taken HSI. So this is the investigatory wing of ICE, okay? Just as we're explaining, right? This is they go and actually investigate cartels and drug traffickers. They have removed HSI agents from long-term drug trafficking and cartel investigations to go and pick up people off the street, going to school or to work or to the hospital.
Yes. At the time, they were like, we feel like... raiding workplaces is not a good use of our time.
Mm.
Yeah, gee. Which again, the stereotype about immigrants, you know, the lazy immigrant, the leech, the mooch, the person who's not, but supposedly, you know, on our Medicaid, who goes and gets up at 5 a.m. in the morning to work at the meat processing plant.
Well, I mean, let's talk about this stereotype and what we're actually seeing from the detained community. Because I've done this work for a long time, and wherever there is accessible movement, hello, Delaney, all of this, wherever we see it, it's not because somebody decided to show up outside the facility, and God bless all those people who do, and let's keep going. It's the people inside that started every time.
Yeah.
Every single time it's the people inside. And what we have a sort of slang amongst immigration lawyers when we get, you know, oh, we have a resource or we need to tell our clients about a change or there's this, whatever it may be, we'll say we'll publicize it inside. What we mean is we tell one person. I tell one person. They will tell everybody there if there's an option for any sort of help, assistance. Like there are family networks that have been created. Families will find themselves, create WhatsApp and Signal chats and share information constantly, rally people to resistance sites. Like it is absolutely breathtaking to me when you see people who are in places like Alligator Alcatraz, where they're now transferring people out. There was a group of men who were taken to the federal detention center in Miami. Half of them had to be hospitalized just from coming out of the facility. Just from walking out of the Everglades, they had to all go immediately to the hospital. Yet those people who need to be in a hospital bed are also looking out for the people next to them and getting the word out about what's happening. That's how we know what the box is. That's how we know what happened when they held people out in the sun. And it's, you know, a testament.
They're risking
to just,
it all.
There is everything.
They're risking it all and they are getting the word out. They're going on hunger strikes. They're going on these labor strikes. I did want to, you know, play this because it is so beautiful and it does kind of speak to, you know, what is the solution? And look, I commend electeds who are trying to visit the facilities, who are pushing back. You know, you've got Ross Baraka, mayor of Newark, being arrested. I think Governor Mickey Sherrill went, you know, to tour Delaney. I mean, it's all just kind of like, you know, the touring is sort of, it feels a little cruel. You're like, I think you should probably just, you know, sign legislation to shut this thing down. And whatever happened to states' rights kind of thing. But here is my, my queen, Miss Rachel, mine and my daughter's. She has been on, you know, as a lover
of
children.
I love this so much.
She is, God, if I cried before, I'm going to cry again. Outside Delaney with the family members who are there, who have been, you know, protesting and whose parents and family is inside. Here she is.
I'll sing from here and you sing from there. Together we'll sing down the walls everywhere. With love in our hearts rising up like the sea. Together we'll sing until everyone's free.
Together we'll sing till everyone's free. And it seems like they're gonna sing them home is the hashtag, 7 p.m. every night. So you know, I guess let's just talk a little bit about what is missing from the conversation, which I think we see so clearly in that clip, which is humanity and empathy, that when it comes to immigration, which I kind of, I feel like in a lot of issues, I feel like abortion is very similar. Like, it's all court related and policy, and it's hung up in these, yes, different appeals and whatnot. But we never come back to the core of it, which is people are dying. People are human. People don't deserve to be treated like this. Just give me your thoughts, having done this work.
Well, I think we have to, you know, I think we need a big dose of truth telling in this space and getting real about why we're seeing what's happening in immigration and what it means for all of us. And what I mean by that is this distinction of me and them, immigrant, citizen, all of these things, we are harming ourselves. We're hurting ourselves by hanging on to any of these sort of distinctions. There's a reason that the Trump regime has started with immigration. The executive office has almost supreme control over immigration. They can do what the fuck they want in this space with very, very little pushback, all right? This is not them telling Congress to go pass a bill. They get to do it. So why do they start destroying due process, destroying basic constitutional values, and getting us used to it, and calling the ones who get the raw end of the deal the other, and the, you know, the rats and these sort of things? It's coming for all of us, and we already see it in trans rights. We see it in women's rights. We see it in the complete destruction of the Black vote.
Yes.
Right? It's coming to absolutely all of us. So this is a long time coming. Frankly, my opinion of the Trump regime is that this is a terrible outcropping of disease that has been growing in our country for a very long time. You know, we've allowed ourselves to get to this oligarchical, basically authoritarian state, and it's going to be up to us to really step out. So people have to get involved. They've got to come out. They're going to have to get a bit uncomfortable. They're going to have to open their hearts, their minds, their wallets, and their time.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you're naming what I've talked about before too, is that, you know, the surveillance apparatus, the, you know, private detention facilities, the amount that they're tracking people. Immigrants are the excuse, and they are the guinea pigs for, you know, broader programs of undesirables. And based on, you know, Trump's enemies lists and his NSPM7 or whatever the hell, yes, anyone who is deemed anti-American, whatever the hell that means, is an undesirable. And I think we saw this with the...
That's right.
Right. And so, like, this machinery needs to be completely abolished.
Yes.
And I guess I just feel like when we talk about immigration, like you're saying, there's just way too much like, well, yeah, the right way, the wrong way. None of that has mattered to the Trump administration, because none of that has mattered to them from the beginning. That's what they dupe us with. And, you know, people were like, oh, I guess, well, the border has to be secure. It is secure, actually.
Yes.
It's incredibly
secure. Actually, it is. Yeah. I would argue that every single politician who has taken the stage in the last 30 years or more and said, well, yes, of course we have an immigration crisis, but bullshit. No. That is a propaganda that's been set up to make profit. That is what this is all about. It is profit and political power, period, period. And until we start realizing that and understanding, and it's also just, you know, it's such a testament to how successful this propaganda campaign has been, because you can, you know, do one Google search of what happens to a community that's rich in immigrant culture. Wages go up. Schools improve, the economy improves. Like, it's just, this is not rocket. This is not new information. We benefit as an immigrant community. We are supposed to be intended to be an immigrant community. Like,
no, and
get
and
over it,
trauma,
and let's have a constitution that works.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the more on every single level, I mean, I think the economic level is also really real. Like, again, it's a divide and conquer strategy. Capitalism and late, you know, bosses love, you know, immigrants who are too scared to, they want them to live in the shadows. They want them to not be able to, you know, organize for a better wage. That's the whole point. They make more money off of them, but even better, lock them up and make them,
that's right.
I don't know, make whatever the hell they're, what are they making? Like, pens, or I don't know what the fuck people are, you know, assembling over there. But Katie, is there anything else we need to talk about here? Any final words? How can people support Sanctuary of the South?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, get involved, join this movement, join this community, visit our website, check out what we're doing. We have a very specific program right now we're doing with the big coalition in Florida and a group called the Workers Circle. We're actually providing pro bono representation to every person who's still at the Everglades internment camp so they can have some sort of lawyer rep before they're disappeared in the system. We've raised over $150,000 for that with Workers Circle, and that is based on just people sending $5. And the ability to tell people before they're disappeared in the system, you have a lawyer and I've got you. Like, it was it was one of the best moments of my entire professional life that I never thought I'd have. One of my best moments of my professional life in this admin. But just get out there, get involved, find us. And please, we've got a GoFundMe, support us, and we can't wait to see you out there.
Well, we'll drop the link and everything. And thank you for your clarity. I feel like the moral clarity and the sort of like specificity of, you know, coming from where you're coming from, it just like it's cutting through. And
it's just the facts, man. This is not like, that's it. We have the facts and just basic human decency on our side. So why is this so hard?
Well, you know, I think I hope to see you also in the, you know, tribunals that we will have for Stephen Miller.
Oh, girl, let's get to the congressional hearing. I'm so ready for it. I'm just like, let's do this.
I can't wait. DeSantis is going to be hauled in front of everybody.
Oh, let me talk to Ron DeSantis.
Oh, God.
I got some things to say to Ron.
Democrats in Florida need to really, and not that they're great, but like.
Democrats need to step the fuck up anyways.
That's what I'm trying to say. Like, if you can't nail DeSantis to the wall on that shit, like, if you can't use this.
If you can't get there, then, I mean.
There's no hope.
There's no hope. Yeah. We're going to build it all again, man.
All right. Well, Katie Blankenship, attorney for Sanctuary of the South. Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Francesca.
Take good care.
All right. Talk to you soon.
And thank you all for being here. Thanks for your comments and your love and all that. Moondragon makes a point on YouTube. Anna and Jenk said that, of course, we should deport the criminals. Yes, they did. Anna and Jenk, too, privately and publicly, have said, well, Jenk told me privately, I'm okay with Trump's ICE plans if they just go after the criminals. And I don't know how to reason with someone so obtuse, who has been doing this for so many years. And that's sort of what I see that side of so many centrist Democrats. People who are uninformed about what is currently happening, have zero curiosity about how Homeland Security investigations had been working, and who, on top of that, are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to a wannabe Nazi administration. Like, you gotta be out your goddamn mind. So anyway, no looking back, right? Swoosh, making a very good point. I think a lot of people were saying the Albanians are 1,000% braver than almost any American. Look, I think a lot of us, and I consider some of the people in detention to be our brave Americans as well. I think a lot of us are sticking our necks out. A lot of people are getting involved, but yeah. I mean, if we could shut shit down around data centers, if we could come out to the streets, if we could block traffic, like I said, it's going down in Bolivia too. Like, I'm like, you know what? I love immigrants. And it's not because they're all voting Democrat. It's because they bring some of that, you know, joy de resistance. It's like, come on now, like wake us the smelling salts under Americans' noses on how we're losing everything unless we fucking step into our power and stop demonizing the very concept of protesting, right? The very concept of protesting, which is so American, has been so thoroughly demonized as well. Anyway, thank you, Mark Gogan, for that. Christo Stefan says they have blood feuds in Albania. You know, no one said that was perfect. Now the Zen says Ivanka Trump is gruesome with a bad nose job. I don't know. I mean, the one thing she is easy on the eyes, but she's very, she's like, she's a fucking Black Mirror character, yo. Rachel Atwood, see you in Brooklyn again. Who wants to join me? Better be a lot. Lucky GSF says, now that Shoycott has lost, please support Connie Chan in the SF General. I mean, look, the difference between, you gotta support Connie Chan. Like, the difference between Scott Wiener very openly stumping for Israel and Connie Chan, unbeknownst to her, I believe, taking her, like, her campaign benefiting from AIPAC money, that's very, very different. You know what to do. Let's go, Connie Chan. Let's go. I shit you not again, saw my capybara shirt. You gotta come to the San Diego Zoo, baby. That San Diego Zoo has that hot, hot capybara merch. And, oh God, it's not the cutest thing I have. I have capybara slippers. They're like my favorite thing. And they I have to sew them because they broke. Anyway. You don't like my music on YouTube says, is John Voight still alive? I'm saying, though, like, we will have a John Voight mayor if we don't knock it off with this centrism. Cap Ditting says, I'm just bitching. Yes, Christo Stefan also reminding us the Knicks tickets are very expensive. Let's see. Real Britain saying the same deportation forces Jenks supports in the U.S. are used to keep him out in the U.K. Like, again, oh, I can't even. Thank you, Surfs TV. What's up, Lance? 6 minutes ago, hitting me up with that raid on Twitch. Thank you. Oh, no, I got to thank everybody at the end. Guys, this is the fart song. If you want a shout out during the fart song, what you got to do is click the join button, become a member on YouTube, get all this exclusive interviews, get all the full access to my amazing interview with Yotam Marom, which is so wonderful. He's so thoughtful. He's dope. We talk about, you know, what it takes to win on the left and how we hold each other back and, you know, cancel culture. Is it real? Is it not? We talk about identity politics. We talk about strategy. His book is so beautiful. You guys should read it. If you've ever been involved in a social justice organization or you want to get involved, it really is very instructive. And thank you so much. There's so many perks and reasons to join on patreon.com/bituationroom. Number one is that it's free right now. So what are you doing? Anyway, this is the fart song. Thank you to Jeff. Oh my God, Jeff. Mwah. He joined the innermost cabal. Video coming to you. What kind of video? You'll have to be a member at the innermost cabal level to find out. Alana Edwards, thank you. Caroline DeCares, thank you. Joanna Kasuki, thank you. Mac, thank you. Maddie B, thank you. Karen Sunberg, thank you. Over on YouTube, Chris Missile, Tracy Ava, Phil Again B, Tropical Ding Dong, Rike, Blanca Molina, Chuck Diesel, all these faves. Adam Burns, Onkit, Melody Jones, Chris, Paul, Moore, T-Style 3714, Spikesons, Banana Rama Ding Dong, Digital Pinpoint, Emilio Estevez, and Paul Kreitzberg. Thank you over on Twitch to Broken Glassage. Thank you, Eric77 The Red, 19 months strong. Thank you, Thigh Stranger. Thank you, Mike Boy for Mayor. Thank you to Pickle Hippie and to Katie Ellis. And thank you so much, Katie, for helping me out modding over there. Speaking of modding, thank you to Todd. Todd the Mod is always holding it down on YouTube. Thank you to Paige Omek, to Andy Vasoyan, and Brent Godin, who's crushing it as always on these long form videos. Give some love to Brent and Andy and Paige. But, you know, Brent, I'll work him. Become a patron. We're streaming Tuesdays. Tomorrow we have a candidate corner. And Thursday I'll be here with Emma Vigeland. So it's kind of a banger week. A lot of shows here at the Bituation Room. Follow the show everywhere at Bituation Pod, Bituation Room. On all the socials. I should update that. And until next time, you guys, fight the power, fuck the patriarchy, free Palestine, and don't just bitch about it, be about it. Later.